Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Lancet Healthy Longevity in Conversation With. I am Sophie Rader, the senior editor of the journal. And today I am joined by Elber van Boetzarar from Médecins Sans Frontières and Utrecht University, and Favila Escobio from HelpAid International, to discuss ways to increase the involvement of older people in the preparedness, response, and recovery phases during humanitarian emergencies. Thank you both very much for joining me today. To set the stage for the discussion, could you please start by delineating why and how humanitarian emergencies are detrimental to the health and well-being of older people in particular?
So maybe just to start us off with some definitions. When we talk about humanitarian emergencies, we talk about acute and about protracted emergencies that are caused by conflicts, by natural disasters, by food insecurity or famine and disease outbreaks. These emergencies typically affect everyone in the population, but they affect some more disproportionately. So for example, we often hear about how children or pregnant women are affected by famine or by conflict. But we hear a lot less often about how these emergencies disproportionately affect older people.
Yeah, and here is where we would like also to highlight also about the current demographic shift that the world is experiencing. So people worldwide are living longer. By 2030, one in six people in the world will be aged 60 years or over. And by 2050, the world's population of people 60 years and older will double. While this shift that we know as population aging started in the high-income countries, it is now low- and middle-income countries that are experiencing this greatest change. By 2050, two-thirds of the world's population over 60 will live in these low- and middle-income countries, which, on the other hand, are those countries more prone to suffer the consequences of humanitarian emergencies. And as Elber was mentioning, let's be clear, humanitarian emergencies are detrimental not only to older people, but to the health and well-being of all humans. But then, generally speaking, we see older people systematically neglected in all the phases of the humanitarian response. And what we see in particular is that they are more often have pre-existing health issues, such as non-communicable diseases that needs continuum of care or limited physical functioning, and reduce access to health and social services, clean water, appropriate food. In addition, older people may have a higher dependency on social and financial support networks compared to other groups. And so when those networks crumble due to the emergency, other people are left at an increased risk of adverse health outcomes. In terms of adverse health outcomes, you can think on the complications of the previously mentioned issues as acute complications related to the chronic diseases, the disability, the injury, malnutrition, and mental health issues.
Perfect. Well, so in your paper, you discuss how underlying ageist notions of older people and of aging more generally contribute to the exclusion of older people during these humanitarian emergencies, and that this ageism exists at different levels. So to begin that discussion, can you discuss the barriers that older people face at the institutional level and the role that this institutional level or macro level ageism plays in humanitarian emergencies?
Thank you. I will try to do a small intro or elbow on this. And let's mention first that in recent years, there's a bigger interest and an action against ageism. Ageism is gaining traction at a global level, but let me define ageism. According to WHO, also, it's about how we think, how we feel, and how we act towards people on the basis of their age. And this is tremendously widespread and overlooked. And unlike other forms of discrimination, including sexism and racism, ageism is generally accepted and, unfortunately, commonly unchallenged. So we can hear phrases in all levels, even in humanitarian responses. It is very normal to institutionalize older people, or phrases like "you should not work," "you are too old," or "let's not admit her or his in this hospital ward because she or him is too old and we are wasting medicines," or "why to spend COVID-19 vaccines on them? It's a waste of money and time." So these stereotypes, prejudice, and discrimination have very deep roots in many of our current society models worldwide. where productivity and a materialistic vision is at the core center of values and beliefs, leading to the point that your human rights are not equal to my human rights based on your age. Humanitarian responses, in a way, are a mirror of this social trend.
So just to complement that, in our paper, we illustrate how ageist attitudes at the institutional or macro level have three categories of consequences. And so one we mention are in discriminatory laws, policies, and priorities. Then the second one is underfunding of health services for older people. And the third one is challenges with regards to accessibility and affordability of health services for older people. So just to go one by one, firstly, the discriminatory laws, policies, and priorities. There's a whole range of international laws and policies and standards that are explicitly safeguarding the rights of older people in humanitarian emergencies, such as the access to food, to shelter, medical care, and other services. However, the issue lies more with the implementation of these policies, and the implementation is really staying behind. An issue here is that for older people, they're often not separately included in data collection and research efforts. And I have this very wise colleague, and they once told me, we don't see what we don't measure, and we don't measure what we don't see. And I think that's really the crux here. As long as we're not collecting data in these emergencies on people of older age, their health needs, for example, will remain invisible, and what is invisible will not be addressed. So we see that this lack of visibility also translates in underfunding. So about 10 years ago, a study was done that showed that only 1% of humanitarian funding was allocated to projects involving at least one activity targeting older people. And, you know, that's not a lot.
Yeah, and this is something that, as Elbor mentions, we really need and want to highlight, because without data, we cannot provide evidence. And there is an urgent need for the collection of disaggregated data, including age, sex, and disability. From previous research, we know that there's a considerable weakness in the quantity and the quality of research of the needs of older people, including health-related needs, in humanitarian crisis. So this also suggests very low levels of prioritization and awareness of the needs of older people among actors, researchers working in humanitarian crisis. So this leads to the neglect operations directed to address the needs of older people in emergencies.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting, and how that lack of priority contributes to this exclusion. And I guess along those lines, how does ageism at an interpersonal level, how does that also then further contribute to this exclusion?
So at the interpersonal level, this can really go two ways. So on the one hand, within the unstable and critical circumstances of humanitarian scenarios, a culture of ageism might exacerbate power dynamics or intergenerational conflicts and discrimination, which in turn can increase the risk of violence and abuse against older people. So in such critical situations, older people's needs and capacities might be discounted, and they might be actively excluded from care and support if they were considered less worthy of that care and support. But on the other hand, in an inclusive culture that values their roles, older people can be perceived in the key supportive roles they can have in humanitarian emergencies. Older people often take on great responsibilities in the care of the grandchildren, some of whom might have been orphaned, and in domestic chores and income-generating activities. However, during emergencies, communities can be placed under enormous stress, and traditional positive attitudes about older people can resultantly be undermined.
Yeah, and it was not mentioned directly in the article, but we can put an example of this interpersonal level ageism: the role of families. Many times, it's the family members taking decisions over the older adults. And this is based in those social norms that we mentioned previously, which many times allow us to act on their behalf. And in humanitarian settings, families we know are under extreme pressure. And this can bring to the cancellation of many of the rights of older people, like the right to care, the right of autonomy, or the right of participation of older adults.
The final level of ageism is self-directed ageism, which I think is a little bit less known. So what is self-directed ageism, and what role does this play during these during humanitarian emergencies?
So self-directed age discrimination is the result of the internalization of the stigma and marginalization experienced at the institutional and interpersonal levels. So when a society sees older people as a burden, older people themselves may internalize this view and then identify themselves as burdens and act accordingly. So self-directed ageism can be a driver behind decision-making around displacement, for example, or health-seeking behaviors. But important to note is that older people might also make autonomous choices to prioritize the health of younger generations without internalizing age-related stigma or marginalization. Even if older people do not face physical or mobility constraints, they could decide to stay behind for different reasons. They might be reluctant to leave their house. They might have resisted previous disaster evacuations without experiencing adverse outcomes. The prospect of moving and starting over elsewhere might be too overwhelming, or they or their family might decide that it's important for someone to stay behind to secure family assets, for example.
Yeah, here is when we can put some examples of how these self-direct ages may play a role, like we were discussing with Elbrook about the case of 2014, with hundreds and thousands of Yazidis were displaced when ISIS took over Sinjar, Mosul, and Nineveh governorate in current Iraq. And there's this was massive displacements of this Yazidi population. And we encountered thousands of people crossing the Syrian-Iraqi-Kurdistan border, in which there was no older people on the groups. And in many cases, when we were asking people, they say that it was a personal decision of themselves, or they were left behind by themselves. Many aspects they considered that they were a burden for the rest of the family, that they were putting in danger the security of the family. Unfortunately, this brought, and we know it later from the reports, to the annihilation of a full age group, of full generations. Mass graves were found, yes, with people over 60, especially women. And in a way, we don't know how much this role of self-aging could be playing a role in this decision. A more recent example is Ukraine, where, as we know, is one out of four people in Ukraine is more than 60 years. And we know that most of the people staying in the current front lines, in the territories of the current front lines, are older people who have stayed behind for a varying of reasons, as Elbert was mentioning. And many times their own decision. Some simple, they prefer to stay at home to secure their place, whatever the dangers would be, rather than struggle in unfamiliar places through displacement internally or externally outside of the country. Others, they don't have the financial means to leave and they decide to stay over. But what we know for sure is that this is paying a big toll on this population and is leading to self-isolation.
You've discussed now in great depth that ageism really is a huge contributor to the exclusion of older people at these different levels during humanitarian emergencies. So what are the consequences, really, of this exclusion?
Yeah, as mentioned, I think the effects of excluding older people, first of all, they are paying a big toll, definitely on their mental and physical health. The isolation mentioned, they are usually exposed to an increased violence, abuse, and neglect. Resources many times can be allocated to other groups, as older people, as mentioned, can be seen as a burden or a lack of access to services with different type of barriers they may experience, from physical ones, as lack of transportation or financial ones, barriers in accessing the health services, or these aging approaches from the health professionals that can lead to the exclusion of older people in the health response. The lack of the data that we mentioned previously also, as most of the times older people are neglected in the data collection and the funding for response in the humanitarian emergencies. And all this leads to much poor health outcomes. It shortens the lifespan. There's a slower recovery from disability and cognitive decline. And it exacerbates other forms of disadvantage, including those related to sex, age, and disability. So consequently, all this takes a heavy toll, not only in the individual, but on the family or the caretakers or the groups in charge of the older people. And this, unfortunately, also exacerbates again the ageist attitudes perpetuates this vicious cycle of abuse and neglect.
Yes, and in addition to that, we know that in many societies, older people have an important role as community connectors, as teachers of traditional practices, and as historical witnesses of previous emergency events within the community. And because of these roles and the knowledge that they hold, older people can really fill a fundamental role in emergency preparedness, response, and recovery. However, if they're excluded from participation, they lose the opportunity to use this knowledge, and that can be considered an epistemic injustice. So this process of exclusion deprives older people of their agency, their autonomy, and independence, with decisions being made on their behalf. And it also harms the community in the end, because valuable knowledge, namely about the community and the local environment and life experience, is not being made available to decision makers.
So presumably, ageism needs to be tackled in order to tackle the exclusion of older people. Of course, this is naturally a huge challenge. But in your paper, you propose specific solutions and approaches that can be used to hopefully increase the inclusion of older people during humanitarian emergencies. So could you describe these different approaches and solutions and how they might overcome these barriers that you've discussed so far?
Yes. So just like you mentioned, it all starts with understanding how the different levels of ageism, namely institutional ageism, interpersonal ageism, and self-directed ageism, all contribute to the exclusion of older people from humanitarian program design, implementation, and evaluation in the different phases of humanitarian emergencies. The ageism that we have discussed is often further compounded by intersectionality of other oppressors, such as, you know, gender, ethnicity, sexual orientation, etc. And so when we understand all this, the next step is then to recognize that the exclusion of older people from the different phases of humanitarian emergencies is actually an epistemic injustice, as their knowledge is not being considered. And in our paper, we then propose participatory approaches to mitigate this epistemic injustice by ensuring active involvement of older people in the different phases of humanitarian emergencies. In our article, we have highlighted one particular approach, design thinking, as a potential method. And although there are many different participatory approaches that are available, design thinking is an approach with great potential to ensure the inclusion and the meaningful participation of older people in humanitarian emergency.
Yes, an example based on Elbrun's article, HelpAge International is currently working, trying to convey the root causes of ageism in humanitarian settings and beyond. First, based also on this method, advocating and promoting changes, you know, in policies and laws, including working with the cluster system, the UN actors, INGOs, and local partners towards these inclusive lenses in the response and inclusion of older people in humanitarian responses. Also working on education and awareness with national and local actors and partners to challenge these social norms that does not allow the inclusion of older people in humanitarian responses. And also working in the intergenerational connection, you know, between different age groups. As on the contrary of other disadvantaged groups, older people in emergencies has no voice and are totally disempowered to claim for their rights and their added value during humanitarian crisis.
Yeah, and we really hope that, you know, in sort of improved collaboration between humanitarian actors, as Fabila is mentioning, and older people would subsequently contribute to the development of programs and interventions that are more fit for purpose or that are more appropriate for older people than existing programs, because they would better meet the unique needs and priorities of older people and consider their strengths and knowledge.
So you've touched on this quite a bit now, but looking ahead, what are some of the key steps that you think still need to be taken in research or in policy to further promote the inclusion of older people?
So I think important to emphasize is really that the exclusion of older people is discriminatory. It violates core humanitarian and bioethical principles, and it leads to an epistemic injustice. And that's what we've really tried to state in our article. And more concretely, we suggest that humanitarian actors adopt participatory approaches with older people in the design, in the implementation, and the evaluation of programs and interventions in humanitarian contexts.
Yeah, definitely. As humanitarian actors, we have the obligation to raise the voice of older people, not to be totally neglected in humanitarian responses and to dissolve the blind spot on their inclusion. Because only by actively including other people in the design, implementation, and evaluation of these programs and interventions in humanitarian emergencies, we are really able to fully honor their rights, their needs, and strength to transform the principle of the humanitarian mantra of leaving no one behind from a slogan to the reality.
Fantastic. Well, that was really, really interesting. And it really highlights, well, the importance of more data on older people and just overall increasing their visibility and lending them more voice during these humanitarian emergencies. So thank you so much for this really, really interesting discussion.
Thank you so much to Elberg and Fadila for joining us and to you all for listening. The paper we discussed today can be found on our website in the January 2024 issue and is open access. Remember that you can subscribe to The Lancet Healthy Longevity in conversation with wherever you usually get your podcasts. Thank you and see you next time.